First of all, I know if you can read the slide, I know that be livable is not a word. And no, I didn't misspell that. In fact, it really is a mashup of two words that I think about as I think about the message of the book of John, which just seems fitting that Tracy opened with John, Duffy came to communion from John, and this morning we're beginning a sermon series in John. But Be Livable is the title of the sermon series, but it's the mashup of those two words, the word believe, which happens to be the title of this morning's sermon, and the word live, which, if I had to say there's one thing that John wants us to know, it's how to live. Secondly, as I just mentioned, we are beginning a new sermon series this morning. It's from the book of John, which leads me to the third thing. If you've got a Bible and want to turn there in a little bit, we will be at the end of the book of John, in John chapter 20, beginning with the 30th verse. Now, if I was going to tell you an unbelievable story, I would want you to know that I was telling you a true story. After all, it's going to be unbelievable. And that's why we have statements in our language like, I'm telling the truth. You would have to see it to believe it. It's because you're telling an unbelievable story. Next, if I was telling you that you were going to hear an unbelievable story, I'd probably want you to know why I was going to tell you the story. Because, after all, that makes all the difference. If I'm telling you a story simply to entertain you, and I tell you it's a true story, I'm just telling you a series of facts, and it's just, it doesn't matter. I don't care what you do with it. I'm just telling you a story because, well, we want to entertain one another. On the other hand, if I was telling you something to inform you, I would want you to understand my role, my position. Was I an eyewitness? Did I see what happened? Or am I a second or third or a fourth person witness? And I want you to know how far down that chain I might be so that you could make a decision on how believable you think the story is. In other words, how much can you trust me as a storyteller? And if I'm not the first person, the eyewitness, how much do you believe that you can trust my sources? In our day, it's nothing to crank out one book after another. I mean, you don't have to worry a whole lot about expenses. I mean, after the movable type printing press and then digital printing and now even digital books, it means that it is constantly and consistently becoming cheaper and easier for someone to print a book. In the days of the New Testament, when the Gospels and the letters of Paul and the books of Peter and the book of Hebrews and James and Jude were being written, that wasn't the case. Materials to write on were expensive, and in fact, many times if you had materials to be written on, you would read what was on them, and then you would take something and scrape the ink off, scrape the top layers of your writing material off, and you would just rewrite on it because it was so expensive to get writing material. Eventually, we have four men who decided that they would do just that. They would take to the expense of writing about the life of Jesus Christ. Now, we don't know how they did it. I mean, it's one thing to be able to find a way to afford the materials, but in those days, many people didn't know how to write, and so you would have to hire a scribe, and it's a possibility that three of the four gospel writers had to pay somebody to write what they wanted on paper. And so it became more expensive. Oh, and since most people didn't read either, it meant that it was an extravagance. It wasn't just expensive, but it became an extravagance to write something down. Because today, most people can read at some, at least elementary level. And so you get a book, and most people can read some books. But in John's day, when he was writing his gospel, that wasn't the case. But yet, despite all of the expense, all of the extravagance, John thinks that it's important to write about Jesus Christ. And so through the expense, we have four accounts of the life of Jesus. There's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and that looks similar, sounds similar. And then we have John that is kind of unique, but each one of them is an account of the good news of Jesus Christ. And we're going to begin looking at the gospel according to John. And while I know that the Sound of Music tells us that starting at the beginning is a very good place to start, we're going to start at the end. We're going to nearly the end of the book of John to begin our look at the Gospel of John. If I was going to write a journal article, if I was going to write a thesis paper, if I was going to write something of that sort, they generally expect that you're going to start by defining what it is that you're going to show and the method that you're going to use to show what it is that you want to show. So that by the end of reading that piece, you will be able to look at it and tell whether I was successful or unsuccessful. But not so with John. That's not how John begins his letter. No, he jumps right in trying to prove what it is he wants to prove, and that is that Jesus is God. And that's quite an unbelievable statement. That will get plenty of backing up as John writes the letter. But in chapter 20, we see John telling us what he wants us to know and something about the process that he's going to use to prove his point. And that's what we're going to look at this morning. So this is what John writes, John chapter 20, beginning with verse 30. He says, Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written, that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. And so John tells us some things that are important to know. And as I've read through the Gospel of John through the years, I always think, John, it would have been nice if you'd have told me that at the beginning. You told me that at the beginning, so I knew where you were going and what you were doing. But John tells us at the end, wrapping things up, because he's told us an unbelievable story. And he says, this is why I've told you the story. This is why we have the story of Nicodemus that Duffy read from this morning. This is why we have the story of the triumphal entry that John records for us, that Tracy read from this morning. Because John is trying to show us something, but John begins and he says, this is the assertion. You have to understand that John is making some claims. That John is going to assert some things, or actually has asserted some things, and he wants you to know something about those. And the first thing that John says is that these are chosen signs. That these are chosen. The things that I have written, they have been chosen. That's why he's able to say, Jesus did many other miraculous signs. Because the ones that John includes, the things that John tells us, are only a portion, they're only a part of everything that John is trying to say. In fact, as I was studying through this, Charles Ryrie, in the Ryrie Study Bible, lists 35 miracles that are present in the Gospels. 35 separate miracles that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John record. 7 of those come from the Gospel of Luke. So John only chose a portion, about a seventh or fifth, somewhere in there, of all the... Trying to do math in my head as I'm talking and I'm losing myself. Anyway, John, 1 out of 5 of the miracles in the Gospels are recorded by John. 7. That means that John was being selective. He looked at the signs that were available to him. He looked at the things that Jesus did as he went from town to town, as he went from Galilee to Judea and Jerusalem, back to Galilee, back to Jerusalem. As Jesus traveled and did ministry, John says that there were a multitude. In fact, he says you couldn't even begin to write all of the things that Jesus did. It just would be impossible. He says, but I have chosen. I have selected 7 of them to tell you. He also says, as he makes those statements, that these 7 miracles, these 7 things that Jesus did, are, well, they're really not of importance by themselves. If they're just things that Jesus did here and there, they're just strange occurrences. But John says, by using the word signs, he says that these point to something beyond themselves. I mean, if you drive down the street today, you leave the parking lot, you head west, which is the only way to go. If you're going any direction but left or and west when you leave the parking lot, somebody's going to be upset you're driving through their property. But you go west, going out of the parking lot, and not very long, you're going to see a yield sign up on a post. You go a little farther, you're going to see a stop sign. Then you're going to see a speed limit sign. And then you keep going, you're going to see another stop sign. Now, those signs, they can't do anything to you. They're just hanging there. I suppose if one of them fell over, it would hurt. But the thing is those signs are just that. They are signs. They're symbols. They point to something beyond themselves, because what they say is that there is a law that is in place that says you have to, on the first one, you have to give up the right of way if somebody is coming at you from the west or somebody is coming at you from the north. You have to stop and let them go first. Those metal things hanging up there have meaning only because they point to the law that is behind them. You know, if they were just metal shapes hanging on posts, they're pointless. And John says, in the same way, the the miracles that he has chosen are of little importance by themselves, but they point to something beyond themselves. And so John makes the assertion that, first of all, there are a lot more things that he could have written, but he chose to write what he wrote on purpose. There is a reason, there is a meaning that John chose what he wrote. That's also the other part of the assertion that John makes, and that is that he has written. That he has taken the time, he has taken the energy, he has gone to the expense, and he has written these things down. That he believed them enough, that he wanted other people to know about them, so he recorded them for us. And I think that when he says, "I have written these," there's a lot of other things I could have included, but I have written these for you. What John is saying to whoever is listening is, these things are of the utmost importance. The things that I have told you are of the utmost importance, and I wanted you to know them. So pay attention. This, in my notes, I wrote, pay attention in all capital letters, and I put exclamation points behind it, because John is making a point, and he's making it strongly. He wants you to pay attention to what he's written. Now, for us, we would say that would make so much more sense, John, if you'd have said that at the very beginning. The difference is we live in a culture where reading and visual stimulus is so much greater than it was in John's day, when a lot of things were done orally. A lot of stories were passed on orally. A lot of entertainment was done orally. And so they could remember things that happened orally very well. And so John says, okay, I've told you the story. You've read it. You've heard it. Now think about it. Pay attention. Really focus your attention on the things that you have just heard about Jesus Christ. And I think it goes beyond. He does say signs. He says, these things I have written. And John records 7 signs. There are a couple of different ideas about what those 7 signs are, but 7 signs. But I think it goes beyond just the miracles to the stories, the statements that John includes, and the interactions that John shows Jesus having, and what they mean. And so, again, we come to the triumphal entry that Tracy talks about. It's a story. It's an event. It's statements about things that took place in the life of Jesus. Or you look at Nicodemus that Duffy brought up this morning. And Nicodemus is one of those interactions that Jesus has with people. And John includes them specifically because they have meaning. The signs, the statements, the interactions are all there because they tell the story. And John says, pay attention. Listen to them. I like what one commentator says. He says, so John is very clear about what he is after in writing the gospel. He wants the signs to point beyond themselves to the person of Jesus Christ. The gospel provides the validation for Jesus' messiahship, and it provides the validation for Jesus not only as the Davidic Messiah, but also the one who shares the very essence of the very nature of God. And so, you get this if you read through and study the book of John. This is Joe Willits, who's a professor up at a seminary in Chicago and a commentator. He said that. But this is what John wants us to do. He wants us to pay attention, because what he is saying, what he is telling us about Jesus, Well, I would say it's unbelievable. And that's part of why John ends this, is because it is unbelievable, but he wants you to believe it. He makes these assertions. He tells us these details about why he chose what he chose and why he wrote what he wrote, because he knows it's unbelievable. But he says, you know what? You need to believe. Now, there are three kinds probably of believing and trusting, having faith, but two of them that really play into what John is saying, two of them that are important here to believe. And one of them is to know the bare facts, to know the truth, to say that I can look out of the window and I can tell you that the sun is shining. Or I can look out and I can tell you that the grass is starting to turn green again. You know, I can tell you facts. I can tell you what color your hair is. And assuming that it's something pretty standard, I can probably do that. And you ask my family if it's something off. Some colors just, I don't understand. But here's the thing. John wants us to know the facts. In fact, he uses the word believe. John MacArthur in his study Bible says that believe is used approximately 100 times in the Gospels. 100 times in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John is the word believe used. That's the number of times that it's used in the book of John. The other three use it less than half as many times. So if you look at John, he uses the word believe 100 times. If you look at Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John combined, you're going to find less than 50 occurrences of the word believe. Now, I don't often think word counts are important, but when John uses the word more than double the times of the other three Gospels, and John isn't the longest of the Gospels, so they have more material, and he still uses it more than double the time, I think the word believe is important to John. It's one of those, you hear him in conversation, and you say, that's John's word. Have you ever done that with somebody? You sit there and you have a conversation with them, or you've been in a relationship with them for a while, and you know that if you're with them, there are certain words or phrases that they're going to use every time you talk to them. Just me? Okay, well, I guess I'm unique. That's okay. But John's word, or one of John's words, is believe. And in fact, if you go to 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, you find that that's the case because he continues to use the word believe. He likes the word believe. But John is stating, as he does, speaking of 1st and 2nd and 3rd John, John is stating, as he does in 1 John 1:3, he says there, he says, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked at, which our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. We proclaim to you what we have seen and heard. John, in his gospel, is writing and he's telling you, I want you to believe this. And he's saying to his audience, he's saying, I was an eyewitness. I was present with Jesus. I saw him with my own eyes. I touched him with my own hands. I heard him with my own ears. I experienced life with Jesus. And I am only telling you what I have heard and seen. He's saying to you, you can believe this if you believe me, because I am a first generation eyewitness. And I want you to be able to believe these things. But there's a second part of believe. There is a assenting to a set of facts, but then there is a type of belief that moves us beyond that to live according to the truth. You see, it's one thing to say that the sun is shining today. That's a fact. It's another thing to say that gravity is working today. And live according to gravity working, because, you know, I don't plan. I don't walk around with rocks in my pocket because I think that sometime later today, gravity is just going to switch off for a second and I'm going to go floating into the air and I need rocks to keep me on the ground. I also, when I go down the street and I see the yield sign, I slow down and look because people come flying through these neighborhoods. And I don't want to get in an accident. Especially if I pull out in front of them at the yield sign and suddenly it's my fault, and I don't want that. And John says, I want you to believe, not just knowing the facts, but I want it to mean something to you. He says, I want you to change your life, the way you live your life, according to the truths that I have written and that you can believe. I have written these things to you so that your life will be changed, so that you will be a changed person who is in the process of changing because of what I have written for you. And he says, I want you to come into a relationship with Jesus Christ. He says, I'm writing these things to you so that you can believe. And as we look at the book of John, one of the things that we'll find is that for John, belief means to come into a relationship with Jesus Christ. It is to come to the point where you die to yourself and you're raised to live a new life. It is going from what you used to be to what you can be. It is going from living like the world says we can live to living like Jesus and for Jesus. John wants this belief to make a change in our life, but he's also writing, and he wants it to be that you continue to live according to what you believe. It's not just a one-time thing where you change, but I'm continuing to live in that change. I'm continuing to live because of that relationship with Jesus, more and more like Jesus. It's not enough to just say, one day I was baptized and that's good enough. Now I can do whatever I want. You know, Paul says, you know, yeah, your sins have been forgiven. And you say, well, good. Shouldn't I just go on sinning so grace may abound? And Paul says, no, that's a bad idea. John is saying, I want you to believe and to continue to believe and for it to continue to make a change in your life. Another commentator says this. He says, to come to believe, speaking about why John writes, to come to believe and to continue to believe, so that the principal purpose of the fourth gospel was the conversion to Christ of unbelievers, both Jews and Gentiles, and also the confirmation of believers in their faith. John wants people who hear the gospel for the first time to come into a relationship with him. He wants people who hear the gospel for the third, the fourth, the fifth, the 70th time to be inspired by what Jesus can do in your life and to continue to live according to that faith. And he says, I want you to believe so that you may have life. You know, the book of John, that's another word that John likes, is the word life. He wants us to believe so that we can live. I couldn't say it any other way. That's why I said be livable. When I was thinking about a title for the sermon series. Because John wants us to believe so that we can live. He wants us to know the truth so that we can come to Jesus and have
life.
Paul, in Romans chapter 10, verses 13 and 14, he says, "For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. How then can they call on the one they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them?" And John would say, "I am writing the gospel so that you have heard the truth, so that you can believe, so that you can come to that relationship with Jesus Christ." Or John puts it this way in John chapter 10, verse 10. This is from the mouth of Jesus. He says, "I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." Jesus wants us to know what life is, not life as the world tells us life is meant to be lived, but life as God tells us it's meant to be lived. And he wants us to experience life to the full. Life without regret. Life without disappointment. Life without having to say I'm sorry. Life without having to ask forgiveness. Because we're living life like Jesus. Now, John knows that we'll never fully attain that, but he says that is the goal. That should be your hope every morning, that today is the day I live the perfect sinless life for one day. And if you can't go for one day, say, "God, please let me live a sinless life for 1 hour." And if you don't think you can make it an hour, say, "God, please just help me get out of bed without sinning this morning." But every day we should be living more and more in the fullness of life that comes through knowing Jesus Christ. Andreas Kostenberger writes this. He says, "John chapter 20, verses 30 through 31, contains perhaps the clearest purpose statement found in any of the Gospels. The present concluding passage makes reference to virtually all the major themes covered in the preceding narrative. Certain selected signs of Jesus, the necessity of believing that the Christ, the Son of God, is Jesus, and the promise of the present, not merely the future, possession of eternal life." In other words, life that is lived today that is changed because of life in eternity. While John's prologue tells us what Jesus is attempting to tell his audience, things like, "In the beginning was the Word became flesh and dwelt among us," John chapter 20, verses 30 through 31 tells us why John wanted to make sure we knew these things. John has this idea that what you believe about Jesus can and should influence the way you live, as well as provide you with the life that is real life, both now and for eternity. This morning, if you don't have a relationship with Jesus Christ that affects every aspect of every day of your life, I'd love to visit with you about what that kind of relationship can look like. If you don't know him as your Savior, then I'd love to visit with you about what that means as well. If you just need somebody to pray with you over a concern or a need to meet Jesus, won't you just come as we sing this next song together?